Welcome back to Myth and Magic for Modern Times, the podcast that shines a light into the subconscious, that looks into personal and collective myths, stories, and archetypes. My name is Jessica. I'm a tarot reader. I do shamanic energy healing, among many other things, and I'm the host of this show. Those many other things is what I wanted to touch on briefly today in this intro. As you may or may not have noticed, these episodes are coming out further apart. I was originally trying to do two times a month, and now it's been about 3 weeks since the last one, and 3 or 4 weeks from the one before that, which is okay. Right now, we're in this time that on the Celtic wheel of the year is springtime. A summer officially begins, at least in the way that the Celts recorded things, next week on June 21st, which is the solstice. And I associate this time with air, which is spaciousness and unfurling and curiosity and newness and play, lots of chatter, lots of movement, lots of communication. And then we're in this time of Gemini right now. It's kind of like double air energy all around us. And there is so much going on. I don't know if you're in the same place, but I've received so many invitations in the past few weeks. And within this space of air, it's so easy to just completely fill the space up with all of the things that are moving through, inviting you to come and play with them. And there's also this possibility, this invitation to create space and hold it and bring in some structure, which as we move into more into summer, the energies will be more helpful with that. But it's possible, even in this crazy Gemini spring swirl that we're in right now too. I am really trying to readjust my own time and remind myself what my focus is, what I'm doing. There's so many wonderful, delicious things that come my way that I've been offered, and time is actually finite, even though for me it has always moved very, very slowly. I've always felt like I have a lot of time. I do a lot with it. But at the end of the day, there's only so much of it, and there's only so much of my energy too. Anyway, all of this is to say that as I'm prioritizing my life, trying to focus on just like basically the bare minimum of work and the most amount of space for my healing and personal projects, my creative projects, that I am practicing restraint and restructuring. And I've been thinking about restructuring these podcasts. I really enjoyed just the conversations that I've been recording, which have been very off the cuff in this theme that I'm working with, and I hope you've enjoyed them too. And you know, all this work that I'm doing as a priestess and a tarot reader is very young. I've only been putting it out there into the world for about a year. I've been practicing it regularly for over 3 years now, about 3 years. But I've been in a rush for it to really grow its legs and be carrying me, but it's taking its time. And I might be taking some time off to kind of think about what I want to do with this podcast more and maybe add some more structure to it. Maybe start recording some on my own. But in the meantime, I do have some other personal projects I want to get to. So yeah, spaciousness, making space. Thank you for listening to all of this, for those who are still here. This is a long episode that I'm leading into, so I guess it deserves a longer intro. I am really, really excited about this episode that I'm presenting to you. It is just a juicy nugget. It is like a delicious, long, drawn out, leisurely meal where different glasses of wine come in and you drink them and then they're taken away and another one comes in, and there's like lots of little dishes that come by. They're just a bite or two each, and some of them speak to each other, and then some of them are like, whoa, where did that come from? What meal am I eating again now? That's what this episode is like. It features Elise Osborne, who I have a really special connection with. She read my tarot cards for the very first time years ago, maybe even a decade ago at this point. And then she had me on her podcast over Christmas last year. Her podcast is called Neon Cauldron, which is the greatest name of all time. And so she introduced me both to tarot and to podcasts. So I'm just so grateful to her. And she's so cool. She is a wild woman. She's a total genius. This conversation covers much ground and kind of briefly touches on our theoretical topic that we said we were going to talk about, which was to discuss archetypes through the lens of J.R.R. Tolkien, Carl Jung, and Joseph Campbell. And yeah, this is kind of what I've been noticing about these podcasts, that they really have served to just be a taste, an appetizer. I must really be hungry right now. I don't know where all this food metaphors are coming from. Anyway, they're just these openings into the topic that I think we're going to talk about in depth, and rather than like a full investigation and thorough reporting, something with a thesis and a beginning and a middle of an end. And maybe it's the Virgo in me that's pushing for that, or maybe it's a good idea to start building more in, or maybe this podcast could start having a series of episodes covering one topic. Those are all of the things that are swirling around in my mind right now, and that may take time to materialize in this 3D world that we live in. Let me know what you think, what you enjoy about the show, what you don't enjoy, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Let's get into that now.
Is this better?
That sounded good.
Okay. I think maybe it's the angle that I'm holding. And I'm also going to try another one little thing. Oh, damn it. I had like, this sort of like speaker, muffler thing to, does that help?
Yeah, what? It does.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I made this, homemade speaker foam for my phone.
Yeah, I do really want to hang out sometime or talk more and hear about all the stuff you're up to. Sounds like you're creating a lot.
I am a creator. It's a chaotic, wild, yang, female, explosive, terrible feeling. But sometimes all the creation funnels into something that's actually something I could show off. And that's only like a percentage. I feel like being creative is a blessing and a curse. Because there's, I don't know, it depends on like what kind of creative you are, but I'm a chaotic creative. So I'm like constantly like compulsively making so many things. And sometimes they add up and sometimes they don't. And sometimes it's just like a tornado swamp around me.
I heard this interpretation of the Five of Wands that I hadn't heard before, which is that it is like the creative process, and it's this lava coming up that hasn't cooled yet, and everything looks messy, and things are just difficult and don't make sense, and you have to kind of push through all of this stuff to get to the other side of it, and it doesn't look like anything when you're in it.
I wonder how they got that out of Five of Wands. I feel like there's other cards that I could sense that from a little more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as I'm sure you've noticed, that like we all have different interpretations of cards, and what brings us there sometimes is just uncanny things. And, you know, also like sometimes I'll pull a card and I have a set registry of like connotations and meanings that it could possibly mean. And then the card will just be like, one thing will yell at me from the card, mm-hmm. like one image. And I'm like, this is what this card means right now.
Yeah, that happens to me too. And I've read so many books on tarot and talked to so many people and had my cards read so many times. But the strongest messages that resonate through are the ones that I've found through just breakthroughs, through pulling the same card over and over again. And then finally being like, oh my God, it's saying this about my life. That's what the yeah. card's saying me. And then that kind of attaches that meaning to it. And sometimes other meanings will come through, but I'm kind of developing my own
relationship with the tarot and my own interpretation.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, that is how it should be.
I mean, I think there's no point in this experience of the singularity to be experienced in different bodies if we can't have different perspectives, you know? So I think it's
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really the trick of it. And I think that's how tarot works, is that we are all one. And sometimes we get lost, and then the oneness related to by a sister witch or whoever, and being like, hey, like, remember. You're like, that's as much as I need to know right now. Because don't burst my bubble. I'm experiencing the oneness through the singularity of this human experience.
Wow.
Well, that's what I think anyway.
I like that. That just kind of blew my mind.
Remembered? You remembered?
What?
You remembered?
I remembered. Yeah. I just had a meeting with another healer who I was talking to her about my house situation. She was like, have you been using magic? And I was like, well, my life is magic. I'm constantly like working energy, but no. And for some reason I was dealing with this horrible thing in my house and just not even remembering that I'm a witch and I have powers and yeah. I can like fill the house with the energy I want and like be working more on various planes. And yeah, you need those sister witches to come in and remind you of things.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, even our own selves, like, I keep a little suitcase of old journals and stuff, and every once in a while, I'll look through it, and there's, like, some little, you know, it's very, like, it was the goth girl, like, so there's lots of poetry, as you'd imagine. There was this poem I wrote as a teen, and it was, like, all of life is forgetting and remembering and forgetting and remembering and forgetting and remembering. Like, that's true. Like, that happens to me at least once a week. I'm like, yeah. What's my power? You know, it's like this deity Hanuman, you know, like this very, very powerful deity that the rest of the gods curse him to forget his power so that he stops knocking the sun out of the sky, you know?
No, I don't know anything about him. Tell me more.
Yeah, no. Well, this is starting to get into this idea of comparison, and you know, these like archetypal and the forgetting and remembering is like the idea that we had to sort of sculpt this conversation around archetypes, and particularly these three men that I would like to talk about: Carl Jung, J.R.R. Tolkien, and Joseph Campbell. So these are people, you know, in our modern day, we talk shit about these old scholarly white men, you know, but the reality of our society is like, yes, they were like these old scholars, and like, that's why people listened to them. And that's why they were able to not only be respected for their concepts, but really explore these things in a way with like all these green lights. Mm-hmm. And I think that we owe a lot to them in being able to not only like think or talk about it, but just that it's like so socially acceptable to think about it in these terms, because they married science and they married public, you know, public approval. So because of
popular in their time? Were they like approved of in their time?
Oh, hell yeah, they were. I mean, you know, Tolkien, he had been working for a really long time. Like, they were old men, you know, when they were receiving like their real laurels. But Jung was definitely like a rock star. he was probably the most successful disciple of Freud, who, you know, he was a bit younger than Freud, but he had his own way, and he was like, oh, okay, cool. But but that's bullshit. And I kind of think this other thing. And I think that the reason why I love these men is because they had these soulful perspectives. They were poets, they were scholars, and they believed in magic. And they were, in their times, looking for ways to bridge a gap between the straight world, you know, the buttoned up world of old that we think of in, you know, a respectable society, and then the fake world, you know, like how do we merge the two? And a lot of their life's work, you know, of course we can keep critiquing them. They're human beings, they're full of flaws. But what remains is their sole intent to take this wild, feminine, chaotic, otherworldly spirit, you know, and find a unifying factor with the everyday formalities that were acceptable. So I think that they're people who are really, have done great work towards like us being able to walk the streets and be like, I'm a witch. And everyone's like, okay, that's what you're up to. That's fine. You know what I mean? Like no one's trying to like hang us or drown us. Like it's because people never understand archetypal forces and how people who leave space for ritual is very natural. And even if they think it's silly, they're not going to be afraid of it, you know, or like, think we're totally insane usually.
I think a lot about how the generations before us have paved the way, and we're watching it happen in real time now, where the work that like you and I are doing is already being manifest in people maybe 10 years younger than us, moving so much further forward than
I was. Definitely on the front line in my own wave of that, and
yeah,
it became frustrating for me to a point, but I'm sure no more so than, you know, like the original flower children and like how I probably was perceived by them. Like, okay, hippie bitch, like great, like you know what I mean, you're magical, like fine. It's always a little annoying, but you know, speaking of like psychological terms, it is really important, and you see this often in many stories, like as we age, we have to age gracefully, and we have to understand when we're able to graduate into a next chapter, you know, like when our shells or skin are too tight, we have to feel comfortable enough to grow and move on, and like, you know, shepherd in like the new little babies that are like, what do I do? I want to do this. You know, even if they're annoying or like don't know, like that's the whole point of children. They're dumb. They don't know things and they are excited and they have energy for it. And you have to find your place in the world that is benevolent, because there's also like, you know, all of these men I just mentioned, like they're exploring stories of the evolution of the human soul in a mortal coil and see these archetypes of these crones or old kings that want to kill the baby or like hurt people, or the witch in the woods that's so jealous of the young new thing, and like they create an alignment with decay and entropy, whereas like the benevolent soul, like the wizard or like the fairy godmother, like they are like fairy tale characters, but they're also archetypes of the better self and like how we can grow into becoming divine forces that are aligned with what has come before us and what we're offering to people who don't know what the fuck they're doing and they just want to know.
And our archetypes and stories are so, so important for giving someone a blueprint to build something on and some kind of flashlight to like look down the road a little bit.
But it's also a riddle, like you're like we were saying before.
Oh yeah,
like,
it's not clear for sure. Remember,
but it definitely informs that eureka moment when we're like, oh yes, like this is like this story, or this is like this thing that happened to me in my own story. Now I know what I learned from that, and I can like take that skill set and just move it over to this department. Cool.
Yeah, it's like you know, my parents who don't believe that sexism is really happening anymore, and they think that feminists just hate men, will say things like, oh, but if women wanted to make movies, they would just be doing that. Like, why don't they just go into more science jobs? Like, women don't want to. I'm like, because it's incredibly difficult to go where no woman has gone before and to go into something blind with no map, no model, like nothing whatsoever. Like, most people just don't do that. It takes very courageous.
I think that there's a good point in that, and I think that that's I think that's the gender non-binary experience for sure. And then what I find for my specific labyrinth of narcissistic coding and I don't know what you call it, just being a neurotic mess, like the experience for me in my inabilities to thrive, I don't think that I'm stupid. I don't think I'm I'm, physically abled, mostly mentally abled. but the conditioning around that and the mind traps around just what I have to go through to get through the door in my own house and say I'm presentable for the outside world is just crazy compared to a man who could literally roll out of bed and just not even look in the mirror and run out. And it's fine. You know what I mean? They could be a natural human. And I don't think that people realize the amount of psychological conditioning that you have to go through just to walk around, just to go to the store. I think that one concept I always come back to is just bandwidth or a pie chart. We have finite amount of energy and time that we have for our day. So the more that we're cataloging all these mental programs, right, that are running, it just takes more energy and it can be more distracting. So I think that
that's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, that I think what. Way. And to me, that doesn't mean that men or women are inherently good or evil or, whatever, but that's just the reality. And I also am not of the discipline of the glass ceiling, big shoulder pad, 80s, femboss, because that was a lot about how to align as a masculine figure and enter those worlds. So I know that definitely had its time. And I think that it's important to acknowledge your inner masculine, your inner anima, sorry, God. Anyway, speaking of Jung, but the thing is, we can use these stories and these concepts that have been woven into our everyday, into our stories that we're reading, that we're inundated with our acceptance of psychology as a science and these terms that has been provided to us by people that believed in magic, we could use terms to kind of reset how we feel about ourselves and our own empowerment instead of just sort of trying to present in a way we think that we should be perceived as a powerful person or not. So
yes.
I'm all about girl power, babe. I love the Spice Girls. Freaky femme. There's room for it in the world. And it's not because I'm smarter or more capable than those that came before me, but I'm allowed to, and I'm gonna,
Amen, sister. The more I speak to people and am in the, doing the healing work that I'm doing, I think that everyone, or at least most people, are viewing the world. Well, let's just go with everyone. Everyone's viewing the world from their own conditioning and from their own set of containers. And so it's really important to talk about these containers that we're experiencing, because other people just truly don't get it. And people in general, except for a few sociopaths, which is an actual... you're born as a sociopath, and
girl, I know. I've dated a couple. I know.
I think I dated one too.
There, fascinating. Like, I'm like, what? Like, I, once the mask is off, you're like, really? Wow. Like, I mean, it's stunning that exists. And it,
yeah,
yeah, like spiritually minded person, it brings a lot of questions, you know?
But what I'm saying is, most people actually think that they are the good guy, the good girl, like the hero, heroine of their story, doing the right thing, doing the best they can, and are on the side of justice. Like, all people think that, because they're viewing it from their own container, which is why, like, let's share stories, because it's, you know, obviously we don't live in that world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is true in the same way that, you know, the physics law, like every action has an equal and opposite reaction, you know? Like, one thing that we also have to take accountability over is that there can be things that we do and we're trying our best and there's space to learn and grow and look back and be like, whoa, I fucked up. But I love myself and I know where I was coming from and I understand that we're all fucking up all the time because that's how you move, you know? You have to
squish. That's really key too.
To offer when you can, but there's also these things about giving. Like, I'm a giver and there's times where I give to the point where I can't take care of myself and then I need help from someone else, so I'm taking from them. So there's times where you feel that you're being as benevolent as possible, but still you're an asshole because you just have to accept it. Like, that's, we live in a world of this sort of duality, you know, where you're, where everyone has these good and evil forces within us and we're all dickheads, even if we're trying. ourselves anyway.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, people think that they're good and they're doing the best they can, and people are hard on themselves, like everyone is.
Yeah, because there's this wacko idea that you have to be so good, you know? And like, you know, we've been indoctrinated with like these crazy ass religions that are like, you literally have to be good, otherwise you won't get tickets to the big heaven where we don't really know what happens, but it's really cool, or you're gonna get tortured forever. Mad at you, and God doesn't love you, and you'll never see your mom or your puppy or your lover, and you're gonna, and your eyeballs are gonna fall out, but you have to keep going forever. Like, it's just like, so like, everyone's like, I don't want that, fuck. Like, so we like rush out. And I think that there's also beyond that, that's whether or not you're religious, you have to understand it's in your DNA at this point as a Westerner. And even in like, you know, other places in the world where, you know, we're in an individualist society, but there's places where there's collectivist society. So it's like your ancestors can see you, everyone in the neighborhood can see you, everyone's going to hurt and suffer if you don't help, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's this want to be a part of the whole always, and like want to do good because it's a part of our soul. Because like I said, we're all one, but we're lost in this fucking web, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk about archetypes. And by the way, I really want to say that I loved that image of your suitcase full of goth poetry.
Oh, that's an archetype.
And I was just going through a journal of mine and looking at what I had written about 1 year ago. And it was almost to the day, breakthroughs that I've been making now that were given to me by my teacher then, and I like made a note of it, and I didn't understand what she was talking about. And now I've come back around to the same thing, but I'm getting it on a different level. So talk about forgetting and remembering.
Yeah. I mean, that's the, what is that? The samsara, you know, it's like, there's so many concepts around the world of this, like this veil of illusion and the trap of this world. You know, when I was growing up, they would talk about the secular worlds.
Oh, the secular world. Wow.
That is like, that's a familiar concept to probably many of us. And
I haven't thought of that phrase in so long, but I,
We always kind of run away from it. So we're like listening and like, oh, wow. We're like lost in the secular world and we want to hear about the other religions and the other stories. Cause you know, there's a little step back and you can see it and you can be like, yeah, cool. And then you look, you overlook the things like the caste system or whatever. So you're like, wow, that's so exotic. I want to know about Hinduism. Anyway. So the secular world was like this, this place that when people would mention it, and I grew up in a very mixed world, so it wasn't like I was very sheltered, but there were definitely parts of my like Midwestern family that would talk about it. And I would just think of like this light show and like all of these sexy ladies and like all this food and like a nighttime carnival and like all these perverts and like just like, I thought that every time I heard the secular world, I was like dazzling, you know, like I was clearly.
So that's fascinating that it was, in your imagination, it was attractive.
Oh yeah, hell yeah, it was attractive. But it was also like, that was how it was described to me, you know, like the secular world will steal you away with all of its, you know, mirages and worldly items and, you know, like this concept of the material world being inherently evil, but I'm a sensualist, so I'm about it. But there's some truth in that, you know, like I look around and like, how many pairs of leopard print shoes can one woman have? You know, like I collect this shit and I'm like mesmerized by it, but sometimes it really does take up a lot of my time. And the physical world is a reflection of like, it's the densest, densest representation of the world. The physical world. So as things are manifested, that's like the densest. I mean, it's also on a vibrational level, like the way the atoms exist. Like my pair of leopard print shoes I'm looking at right here. These are atoms that are like, moving at, you know, like this crazy vibration that's creating like really dense matter. And you know, maybe them, I'm just like armchair philosophy right now, I'm gonna like stop myself. But okay. What I'm saying is like there's pros and cons to the secular world and being lost in the aesthetics of everything, but also it's an illusion. You know, it's a playful illusion and you can use it and you're supposed to, and that's what we're here for. But also it's not the whole shebang, you know, like there are deeper things and we can get swept up, and that's how we keep forgetting that we are more powerful than it, you know? But again, I'm not a purist. Like I am a dirty girl. Like I'm a maximalist. I'm a sensualist. I'm a hedonist. Like I have in my heart, like love and truth and it's great devotion to God with a big G, you know, but all of the little details that are swimming around, I like, I'm also in awe of, you know, but I would not for any second want to just say that this world is just a game of trying to be as pure as possible. I think in some ways it is, but I don't know. I just think that we're all connected. And like, sometimes it's just like carving out a niche and exploring things that haven't been explored before is like what we're really supposed to be doing in this dimension.
Well, we're in a physical body, having a physical experience for a reason. And a part of that is enjoying the body, like the pursuit of pentacles, the food, the house, the community, the work. And,
that and all the skepticies cracked the big crystal at the Great Conjunction, so we're stuck here. Sorry, that was like a dark crystal reference, which for some reason I can't stop doing on podcasts.
Oh, I haven't seen that in a million years. I should go back and rewatch it.
No, there's no need. No, like,
there's no need.
Like you don't have to, that's not important.
Okay. So let's get back to our dudes in question. I didn't realize that Joseph Campbell was believed in magic. I didn't know that much about him. other than that he wrote Hero with a Thousand Faces, which I definitely read, I think, in high school, and it didn't make much of an impression on me. I read a lot of books about writing.
It's pretty dry. Let's just say that. Like, I mean, I love him, but, you know, like, he has a, he's a very charming charisma about him. And I think that you don't want to, like, suck down this, like, dry old biscuit of a book. Like, most of us don't. Conveniently, right now, Netflix is airing The Power of Myth, which is this great collection of him really late in life, pretty close to his death, being interviewed by the journalist Bill Moyers. And he's asking him about all these different topics. So, there, you know, there's, it's a series. And it was done at Skywalker Ranch because, you know, George Lucas was really inspired by A Hero with a Thousand Faces. And that's, like, what Star Wars is based off, the hero's journey.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot of very direct connections to Joseph Campbell's work and the Star Wars universe, oddly. But, you know, that's, I think that's why, really why Star Wars was so successful. It's like telling the same fucking story, but it's techno, you know, so people are like, oh, cool, like, I can get into this future, or, like, what is it supposed to be, like, a bazillion years in the past, or whatever it is, like, whatever, anyway, like, spaceships, like, people, like, this is cool.
Spaceships from the past.
Yeah.
So,
I think that he, you know, as far as Joseph Campbell's belief in magic, I think that your soul wants to express itself through its works, and his whole concept of, like, follow your bliss and, like, how synchronicity happens, which is also a Jungian concept.
So what is the name of this, thing on Netflix that you just mentioned?
It's called The Power of Myth with Joseph Campbell and Bill Moyer. And yeah, it's great. So I love it. I had, like, a DVD copy, and I've, like, watched it 1,000 times, but it, like, doesn't really work anymore. And, you know, speaking of The Power of Myth, when everyone's like, VHS is gonna, like, fuck up, you gotta get DVDs. My DVDs don't last that long when I got those. I know everything's like completely digital now anyway, but I'm just saying, like, I have VHS tapes from 1985 that I could still watch, and I have DVDs from, like, last week that would, like, burn into fucking player. So that's myth. But anyway, that's just me, like, an angry, obsolete bitch just ranting.
Oh, I'm right there with you. I love complaining about technology, and I love that I can now come to you and complain about it.
So I just like complaining, you know, really just let some steam out.
So I know that Joseph Campbell wrote that book and took a bunch of myths and distilled them into the hero's journey, if I'm correct.
Yeah. So what he was. And what I like to think of him as, the Mr. Rogers of the occultists, you know, he's like...
Wow. You have such a personal relationship with him. I did not know he was this cool. I'm really excited to watch this.
You know how cool I am. I just love him, you know? And I think he is cool. But, I mean, that's not the first word I would use to describe him. I think he's...
Well, cool. I thought Mr. Rogers was cool, so it's the first word I used, but...
So he writes himself into his own story, you know, like... He talks about his own journey and, like, how he came into these conclusions. And, you know, it's a lofty story. It's a lofty story because it's about a young boy going to a museum and seeing all of these, at first he was just in love with Native American, you know, First Nation people, and he wanted to know their stories. And this was fascinating. And he was, you know, coming in up at a time where you saw a lot of the cowboy and Indian story, like, all over the place. Like, the Western was a very popular genre, you know, back in the day. But so he was really transfixed by this. And as he was growing, he just started And I could relate to this because I learned to read because I loved, some librarian read a Greek myth. And I was a little girl and I like barely knew how to read. And I was like, fuck it, I'm going to learn. And my dad was just telling on my birthday party, he was like, you taught me how to teach you how to read and write. You would like move your baby blocks and be like, okay, how is this a word? Is that a word? Show me on the blocks. I'll study it. Like, I was like, I gotta know because I want to know these stories. And, I think that is, the power of myth. You know, when there's a pulse in something that's existed, before you, but you know that you existed there too, and you can't remember, and you have to find access to it, you know. And you'll do things to seek it out. So I relate to him in that. But also in this way, like, you know, you study something for a long time and then you're like, what else is in the library? Like, I moved a lot as a kid, so I would be in a different library all the time. And I was, you know, when I was little, I wasn't as extroverted as I am now. I would, you know, hang out in the library because I was like, I was, you know, shy and I was introverted and I just wanted to be in my own world. So I'd go there and then you read all the books about Greek mythology, reread them. And then you're like, what else is on the shelf? So you start connecting new concepts, you know, and usually you want to stay in your genre. So I'd be in the nonfiction section and the mythology shelf and same with him. And that's why I feel like such a strong affinity to him. But what he did, and he's been criticized for oversimplifying, you know, he did this thing that is also alive in Jungian concept of archetypes, where he, you know, the hero with a thousand faces is, the thousand faces are all the different incarnations of the hero's journey. And the hero or heroine, you know, the figure that goes, and he talks about the stages of initiation. So in the stages of initiation, he meets different archetypes and he becomes different archetypes. And that's so similar to the story of tarot. You know, it's all about the hero's journey. It's the fool's journey, mm-hmm. you know, and the hero are the same thing.
Are there a lot of similarities between tarot and Joseph Campbell's work? Like, archetypally? Like, this is like the emperor card, or this is the moon.
Same for tarot and Jungian work. Jung's work would definitely, like, I have a book on Jungian concepts within the tarot. Like, I mean, it's all there. And the tarot is just, it's there because the tarot is a very finite group of systems, but somehow it relates infinitely. Mm. So that is definitely a parallel within Joseph Campbell, because he's talking about basically a finite movement of systems or possibilities that can happen infinitely. And if you're playing the infinite game, I know it's pretentious that I keep saying infinite instead of infinite, but I just want to. I consider tarot the infinite game. I consider astrology the infinite game. And to me, that's delicious, because once you have this rudimentary understanding of the alphabet of it, then you start seeing how it's applied in so many ways, you know, and it's not just, you know, as a tarot reader, like, I've given readings to thousands of people, and not everyone I sit with is the same story. I'll sit with the same person a month later and it's a different story, you know, and how is that even fucking possible if there's only 78 cards? Mm-hmm. It's because, there are those, experiences of the journey, but there's a magic in it. Like, there's a shape that comes out of it. There's space that shouldn't be there if you think about it mathematically, or the infinite possibilities that come from these stories, but the bones are the same, you know, like you
You're
move.
Saying the story is, when you do a tarot reading for someone a month later, the stories are different
or the same? The stories are different, but the stories are the same in that we all, like I was saying, we all forget our power, and we all have to deal with some bullshit all the fucking time. We overcome something, we come to a new state, and we think it's cool, and it never is cool. It's always annoying. Like, there's we get a moment of rest, you know, and then we have to figure out how to take care of ourselves on that journey. And sometimes it gets confusing.
Sometimes it gets confusing. Life is definitely confusing.
I mean, every time you think that you have it figured out, that's when you get that world card, you know?
I was going to mention the world card. And I do think it's really important to pause and rest on your laurels and notice your achievements. I've really been I've been given awareness that I just, as soon as I accomplish something, make a breakthrough, move through something, I'm like, okay, where's the next thing? And there's no like just being with it and sitting with life. And that's part of our culture too, like constantly go, 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 what's the next thing?
And then like, always fancy. But also there's you know, we have this youth culture. We're like obsessed with youth. So that happens in ways that are insincere and inorganic. But I think that the way to keep alive is to go from that world card and be kicked down to the pool again. Like, if it wasn't for us being like stupid and like not knowing and trying to figure it out, like we wouldn't really be able to move forward actually, you know, and probably shrivel up.
Well, it reminds me of the Five of Wands again, of like trying something, even if it is messy and there's a lot of other noise and people and competition and not being afraid to like, to just get into it and give it a try and make mistakes, because mistakes are actually fine. Like nothing that you're doing wrong.
But it's also, I mean, like it's also one card in the deck, and sometimes we're not trying and sometimes we're scared and sometimes everything seems fine and then the moon comes out and we're in water and we're like, what happened? Like, I didn't even do anything. And we resist and we're afraid and we become the hanged man. Like, there's no way to figure this riddle out. Like, it just, the only fucking possible thing that I could ever express is like presence, is like the one like hack there, because you can collect all this information. And then what, like you get hit in the head by a rock and you forget like all this information you've gathered, or you see something completely foreign to your concept and it takes forever to understand how to re-register that information. There's just like, I mean, there's no stopping it, this beast, you know? So I think that these things are very comforting to me, and I love playing the infinite game because it gives me a family. It gives me a castle in the clouds that, that I can let hold me when I'm in experiences that are alienating or tumultuous or fucking scary, you know? Like, I have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, actually CPTSD, which is not verified, but I believe it is existing. C, I always think, stands for childhood, but it's complex post-traumatic stress disorder. So I know that, and I know things I know. And I am in a position where I constantly am trying to ground myself and be supportive of others. But there's times where if I feel very afraid, I'll have a panic attack and I can't breathe, and my nervous system overrides anything that I think I know. And there's like this terrible panic that comes over me because I'm like, I see what's happening and I can't stop it. I'm immobile. I'm terrified. And then my brain knows better, but my nervous system is freaking me the fuck out. And all I could do is just write it out, you know? So that's an experience. There's really no treatment for, you know? And, so there's definitely things in our world that will like shake us and throw us off our ass. And I think that, if it weren't for these invisible, realms that we're weaving together as a collective and acknowledging in our conversations, then we would feel a lot more lost, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I had a series of anxiety attacks. I don't know if we've talked about this, just a few weeks ago, and because of PTSD and nearly had a nervous breakdown. And I had just taken this trauma healing workshop that actually gave me a lot of tools for coping with it and a lot of understanding around what was happening. And I'm going to have her on the podcast talking more about trauma and these things at some point.
I think that to me, in my own experience, I think that PTSD has given me so much more license to go beyond the crack of like what is seen and believed, and that there's spaces that are unusual, you know, in our modern day accepting. And then when I seek out like validation of that, like where is my place in the world, you know, characters like Jung and Campbell and Tolkien even, there are figures that I'm like, oh, I trust that, you know, they are talking about some real shit in ways that are wrapped in these sort of different masks, you know?
So Tolkien is on your list. I know this is a magical man who loves trees, and I have read The Hobbit many times. I'm not a big fan of The Lord of the Rings, although I've read it all the way through, but I think it's a little dry. Yeah. Personally,
The reason why I'm mentioning him specifically was because he had created a red book in his world around the same time that Jung made his red book. And there are a lot of parallels in that. And, you know, Jung was a Swiss man, and Tolkien was English, as we know. So the thing is, like, they were creating these worlds and tapping into a space when there was a great war about to happen, and then it did. And I mean, PTSD originally was referred to as, firstly, like shell shock, you know, that was, that was in reference to soldiers who had experienced all this fucked up shit. And I'm not being like a psycho witch when I'm saying, I think that there's some element of like terrible violence that can crack you open into seeing the worlds beyond, because when you lose your footing, where do you go? You know, like there's still some random. And I think that that's when we hear the angels, you know, that's when they come in when we need them most.
Yeah. I know what you mean too. And we're not kind of like encouraging people to seek out violence as a way of awakening, but also doing some kind of having a near-death experience was a big initiation rite for thousands of years.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that also those of us who would even host such thoughts, usually we saw some shit and that's why we're interested in it. You know, like it always leaves that question in our mind, but what was that? You know? So I'm not really concerned that a bunch of people are like, what happens if I like try to kill myself and like I see the devil and I can have magical power? Like, I mean, I feel like somebody that's willing to just go there, like there's something already fraying in the system that they probably need to explore. But I think that for me, you know, I feel like I would be in much worse shape if I wasn't allowed to express myself in my own practices, especially publicly. You know, like I think that's part of why I'm here. And I know that sometimes when like weird things happen to us, we think it's for a reason, and sometimes it's not. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it just happens, but I feel like no regret in my past, because I'm glad to be where I am now, you know. But I think that because of certain things, it opened me up to worlds in ways that I would never have initiated willingly.
No, I never would have initiated any of this willingly that I have gone through in my life either. And I also am really happy with life, and also would never wish it my life on anyone else. I mean, like the bad parts, like a lot of it has been really good, but a lot of it I would never want to relive or have anybody else relive, but it is all part of it.
You know, and that's no accident. Like you've fought for it and you've made it that way, you've made it so. And trying to make sense of it all the time is exhausting. So that's why I'm a
And I can't stop myself from doing it.
But I think that also just like enjoying it is something that I want to do and I forget to do and I want to do, you know, like it's important to also be present in that way that I'm Absolutely. Finding. That's really like come to me all freaked out and they want assurance or they want to know these things. I'm like, sometimes like, I don't even want to answer these questions because you're just like out on this hunt and you are going too far in the woods. And like what you're looking for is the satiation of being safe and present, which you don't need to have all these questions answered for. You need to practice the presence, you know? So I think that that's what it often comes down to is like, we're looking to feel present in all of these riddles when it's just right in front of us. And that's why it's the fool, you know what I mean? Like you don't see the ground you're walking on.
Well, yeah, uncertainty, like our genetic system, like our history tells us uncertainty equals death, or at least it could. And then the body freaks out and the brain freaks out and people come to tarot for certainty. But really what tarot is a guide for clarity and confirmation and awareness.
Maybe. I don't know what tarot is. I don't know. I can't say. I mean, I play the infinite game, but yeah. Results are not in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. That's how I use tarot is to...
I mean, that's I think, a way that I'm using it for sure, mostly. But, I don't know. Like, for all I know, it's like this amazing race car and I'm just using the radio in the driveway. Like, I don't know.
I had this client who came to me and was like, this tarot reader told me I'm going to have a baby and I really don't want one. Like, tell me it's not true. And I was like, what tarot reader told you you're going to get pregnant? Like, that's so irresponsible.
I mean, okay, listen, two things. I definitely have predicted pregnancies accurately because that sometimes comes up. But also, there are so many bullshit readers, and God bless them because I'm a lover of chaos, and I think that we're not here to parent everyone. Like, we do our best for each other. We also got to figure our shit out in our own sort of exploration. But there's definitely a lot of what I call the neon sign ladies that are agents of chaos. You know what I mean?
Neon sign ladies? Is that from the secular world?
Yeah, it's definitely part of that Ferris wheel of bad bitches in the secular world. You know, like the woman that she has like be back in 10 minutes and then you have to call a number. I definitely gone to these ladies because I'm like, what are they up to? What do they do? You know? And then they do a little reading and they have this little tiny funky ass room that, you know what I mean? And they're just like looking at you and they have like dark eye bags, you know, under their eyes. And they're like, you have a curse. You need to give me $100 so I can light a candle for you when you're not.
Have you found those ladies? And people are always telling me that they exist. Yeah.
But what exists?
Oh, that's another archetype and a myth that there are these tarot readers out there that want to, that tell you have a curse and that they can cure it and you need to give them hundreds of dollars. But I've never personally experienced them before, but you've found some of these ladies.
I'm like in the shit. Like I'm like, what's up with you? Like, I want to know all the things, you know? And and it's not like, you bitch, you need to respect the craft more. I'm like, good. Like, you're a part of this universe. You're a part of this terrarium. And we're all free-willed, sovereign creatures that are running around bumping of myself as being a bad girl. But I kind of do. You know, I think I'm bad and good. And I always want to fight for people to be okay and loved, but I also think that if it weren't for our trials and experiences, like, we wouldn't be able to really be completely in control of ourselves. And I was saying that we are sovereign, willful beings in charge of ourselves, and we make decisions as adults to further ourselves. And if a friend asked me to give them a reading, I would drop it down. But like in regular passing, I'm not the police of everyone. Like, I don't think that is appropriate. I'm not everyone's mommy, you know? So people are going to have weird experiences with people that are full of shit, but no more are they going to have a shitty experience with a neon sign lady that they are with their own doctor or like, you know, mother-in-law or, you know, like some app that like takes their money and doesn't send them their pantyhose or whatever. Like, this is like the world's full of tricksters, like, which doesn't mean that you should be paranoid and suspicious of everyone, but you have to let that happen because that's the reality of the nature of this world, you know?
Yeah. I like that. And we're not here to evangelize anybody. We're here to, I don't know.
I mean, I definitely have my own things that I believe and think. And I mean, everything I'm saying is just a projection of my own inner belief system. But I want to feel free to explore the world as I'd like. And I want everyone else to. And I want to feel loved and accepted in that. And love and accept. That's what I want.
Yeah. I like that we have started this conversation about archetypes, which is a way of trying to create these building blocks and this blueprint and put names to things and create structure. And the conversation has dissolved into chaos and tricksters, which of course are their own archetypes and are piece of the puzzle.
And I think the archetype of the trickster is so holy in a way, because it reminds you to not be too obsessed with what your archetype is, because we're all of them, you know? And this is something that I keep having a little bit of a trial with myself, as someone who's trying to exist as an independent contractor in our modern economy. I have this wonderful guest on my podcast, Neon Cauldron, Capitola, and she's called the Digital Witch, and she does these great things where she has people who have their businesses and she tells them what their tarot archetypes are, and that helps them market better in a more authentic way. And I was like, great, like, that would make my life so much easier. What's my archetype? And then I don't know, you know what I mean? So
I listened to that episode, and you were the were you the magician or the performer? Yeah,
I am a performer. She did say magician. I also feel like a little bit of a rebel, which is more Carolyn Meese, who's sort of like a Jungian in that way, where she took her own sort of like exploration of the archetypes, built off of him. So this is something I keep coming and I keep bucking against as someone who wants to be a public person and offer information to people and be in love with what I'm in love with and keep creating and have like vessels for it. Part of that is coming to terms with, oh, what archetype do I represent? How do I present myself? And to me, that grosses me out a little bit, because I'm like, I don't want to be trapped into a character that's also me, and then I have to be that person, and then it's not me, and then I have to be stuck. And meanwhile, there's this like subtext under that that tells other people that are listening to me that they have to be stuck and present themselves as this very specific archetype. Mm-hmm. If they don't, then they're off the ball. Like, I don't believe in that. You know,
I hated being labeled. I still hate being labeled. Like in high school, when you were like a goth or a preppy or like in drama. And then you have to, or punk, and then you have to dress a certain way, and you have to hang out with the same people, and you have to do all these things, and like the world provides you with this finite amount of like holes that you can plug yourself into.
Like, I feel like describing the movie The Breakfast Club.
Yes. And in my trauma healing workshop, we were talking about aspects and all of the different aspects within yourself. And some of these aspects hold trauma, but it's been really helpful as I'm moving through my life, because I'm a professional in a high powered job, and I'm a tarot reader and a healer, and I work at a daycare, and I am a single white woman living my life in San Francisco. And there's like, and I'm a writer, and there's all of these different things. And sometimes, and I just keep giving myself permission to be all of them, and that they can all have their own wardrobe, and like they, even things that they want to eat, or like people that they want to hang out with, like all these different parts of myself. And that's fine.
Yeah, it is fine. I mean, I don't think that we need to double down on a character. And that's when you see somebody's soul being corroded, and then their life will eventually fall apart drastically to shake them back into awareness. But I mean, I don't know, like, we don't have to decide all the time, and like, we can do whatever we want, and all of these things all around us are green lights. And then when we play the higher principle, like, what am I trying to accomplish? Sometimes we decide, okay, I'm going to put some of these different pastimes or explorations on hold, because I'm going to like focus hyper hard on this thing to further this wish I want. You know, these are all things available to us on our palette, and we can do what we want with it.
We can do what we want all the time.
And we do. We do.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all this with me. Really appreciate your honesty and everything that you have to share and say. It's such an honor and a privilege to have you here.
Thank you, Jessica. Likewise. I love your beautiful radio voice.
Aww.
And it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah. Well, let's do this again soon. And in the meantime, people can find you over on Neon Cauldron. And anywhere else they should check out?
I mean, today I just got this new computer and I'm downloading these new things. I have my podcast, Neon Cauldron, which is holding its breath to release its 40th episode.
Wow.
So I'm like revamping the whole thing, and I'm getting better technology. But all of my previous episodes have been interviews, including an interview with you. And if people want to find that, Neon Cauldron has a website, neoncauldron.world. And you can find the world of Neon Cauldron on there. And there's more things to come. There's actually a lot of stuff that I'm working on that I'm not at liberty to speak of right now.
Aww. But
there's going to be a fuckload of fun for people. And it's not just listening to me wank off about what I think the world's made of. It's a playground.
Well, let's check back in on that then when you can release information.
Tight.
All right. Great. Thanks, Elise.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yay.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello again. Thanks so much for listening to the show. You can find me, Jessica, or to order a reading, to chat with me, to whatever, on Instagram, where I am at J, like the bird, J-A-Y, and Juniper, like the plant, J-U-N-I-P-E-R, so J and Juniper. I'm also at jandjuniper.com. My Etsy store is J and Juniper. And connect with me there and let me know if you want to do a podcast with me, or if you want to do some work with me. If you're in San Francisco, I'm at the Assembly, a co-working space in the Mission, every other Friday. So I'll be there this Friday, and I'm actually going to be there for the solstice and then the Friday after that, so three times in June. It's such a pleasure to have you here. Thank you for your support. Have a wonderful rest of whatever it is you're up to, wherever you are. Much love from me. Bye.